Hello and welcome back. My name is Rabbi Avi Heller, and together we are learning Masechet Moed Katan. We find ourselves at the very top of Daf Yud Bet Amud Aleph, that's 12a, and we're starting right at the top, first word. This series of recordings is a joint project of OU Torah, the OU Department of Synagogue Services, and the Daf HaShavua Foundation. Just to set the context for what we're talking about, we're at the very beginning of the second chapter, and we're continuing our discussion of things that you are allowed and are not allowed to do on Chol HaMoed, which are the intermediate days of the festival. However, in the second chapter, we've also introduced a new topic, which is the topic of avelut, of mourning. And there are some similarities between what you're allowed and not allowed to do on Chol HaMoed and what you're allowed and not allowed to do when you're a mourner. So we started discussing that regarding pressing olives, but then we moved on to the topic of various kinds of employees, people doing work for each other, either you doing work for someone else or someone else doing work for you. And we identified a few different categories of work. There is a category of work that's called a schir yom, which is a day laborer, in which your time, you agree to work for a person for a certain amount of time, usually for a one-day period. And then there's a second kind of laborer, which is called a kablan. We call that mostly an independent contractor. It's where you agree to do a specific unit of work for someone, but it's not related to the time, it's related to the product. Related to that, and this is our topic for today, is something called kibolet, which is contract work. Now, contract work is something in between a vendor and an employer and an employee, depending on the circumstance. So it could be related to a schir yom, to a day laborer, where let's say you agree to work every Monday for a certain person, or you agree to work for a week's worth of work. So you've made a contract for a certain period of time. It could also apply to a regular thing. You agree to provide a certain material to someone once every month, like a subscription service, or it could be like an employee situation. So there are various kinds of situations where that could be the case. Now, in our particular case, we're going to be talking about when you have a contract, a kibolet, with a non-Jew. You've hired a non-Jew, whether it's a handyman or a laborer of some other kind, to do work for you. Now, there are two topics that are under discussion. One is mourning, avelut, and the minority opinion, which is the opinion of Tosfot, is that the discussion we're about to start in the Gemara is talking about when you're allowed to hire a non-Jew to do work for you while you're a mourner. As we indicated in the previous Amud, according to Rav Shisha, who is the stringent opinion, you cannot do any work when you're a mourner during your Shiva period. However, you can hire someone to do certain kinds of work, and the question is what kinds of contract work are allowed and what kinds of work are not allowed. That's the minority opinion, and we're not gonna read the Gemara that way. I'm just mentioning it. The majority opinion of Rashi and the other Rishonim is that what we're talking about here in general is when you're allowed to hire a non-Jewish worker to do work for you on Shabbat, on a Chag, a holiday, or on Chol HaMoed. And this is a very halacha lemaisa topic, a topic that's of a lot of contemporary relevance, specifically for homeowners who may be working with contractors. We had this issue quite a lot when trying to get scheduled people to come to do work on our house when we bought a house, and also, let's say, for dry cleaners and other similar topics. So let's start at the top of Yud Bet Amud Aleph. Amar Shmuel. Shmuel said, Mikablei kibolet, a person who received contracted labor. So this is referring to a non-Jew doing work for a Jew. Betoch hatchum aser, if he accepts the work inside of the city, then it is forbidden for him to do it. Now, the language here is the tum, which means not only the city, but a short area around it. There's, on Shabbat, there's a certain area of Amot, 2,000 Amot, around where you live, which is supposed to be, you're not supposed to travel outside of that area on Shabbat. So within the area of your habitation on Shabbat, you should not have a non-Jew doing work for you. Chutz l'tchum, but if it's outside of the tchum, in other words, you're having a non-Jew do work for you in an uninhabited area, mutar, then it is permitted. So based on this formulation, it sounds like the issue is not inherently of having a non-Jew do work for you on Shabbat. Let's say we'll take Shabbat as our first example. But basically, the problem is how it looks. So there may be multiple problems here. Either it looks like you have specifically hired a non-Jew to do work for you on Shabbat, which, you know, is a problem. And also perhaps because people might think that you did it on Shabbat as opposed to arranging it before Shabbat. Or also it may be a problem that it causes a lot of noise depending on what the work is. It's very public and it may be very noisy. And these things don't look right on Shabbat. However, if they're outside the tchum, then no one will see it. And therefore, since it's not inherently problematic to hire this non-Jew, it would be permitted to do it. Now we're going to have a few limitations on this. Amar Rav Papa. Rav Papa said, "V'afilu chutz l'tchum, even outside the tchum, lo amran, we don't say that it's permitted. Ella, except deleka, if there isn't, mata de mikrova lahatam, a city that's close to there." So even if it's outside of your tchum, it's outside of your city, if it's right adjacent to some other city where Jews live in, that seems to be the implication, then you can't do it. Aval ika mata de mikrova lahatam, but if there is another city that is close to where they're doing the work, asur, it's still forbidden. So it has to be outside the tchum and not close to another place where people live. But that would still be okay as long as it's out in the countryside. Amarav Misharshia, Rav Misharshia adds another limitation. V'chileka mata de mikra v'lahatam, and even when there isn't another city that's close to where they're doing the work, nami lo amran, we still don't say that it's permitted. Ela b'shabbatot uv'yamim tovim, except for on Shabbat and on Yom Tov. D'lo shchichi inshe, that people do not frequently azli lahatam, go there. Meaning on Shabbat and Yom Tov, people stay in their towns because you're not allowed to go outside of the tchum on Shabbat and on Yom Tov, so people don't travel around to other places. Aval b'cholo shel moed, but on chol moed, the shchichi in shei da'azli, where people do travel around, they go out of their regular towns, va'atu lahatam, and they may come to where the people are doing the work, asur, then it's forbidden. So basically, assuming that the whole issue is how much attention it will cause, ironically, Chol HaMoed is more stringent than Shabbat and Yom Tov, because in Shabbat and Yom Tov, people won't see the work that's being done. On Chol HaMoed, when they're traveling more, they may see the work that's being done. Now we tell a story. So we had two limitations. One is that it should be, both limitations are a further limitation. One is a limitation on space, it has to be away from all habitation, and one on time, that's only on Shabbat and Yom Tov and not on Chol HaMoed. Marzutra Breid Rav Nachman, Marzutra Banule Apadana, he built himself a palace. Now, I don't know if this just means a house or a public meeting hall, but it was some fancy building. Mikablei Kibolet, it was built by people who were contracted to do the work, so general contractor. Chutz L'tchum, and he did it outside of the area of the city. Ikla Rav Safra Rav Huna Bar Chinina. So after it was built, Rav Safra and Rav Huna went there, v'lo alu l'gabe, and they didn't go into the house. Now this means they didn't go into the house on purpose. In other words, they felt that the way in which the house had been built was improper because it was built on it was built presumably on Shabbat or Yom Tov or Chol HaMoed. It's unclear which of those, and that it was built improperly. And therefore, they didn't want to get hana from it. They didn't want to use the building because they thought it was inappropriate. The Ika de Amri, and some people say, Hunami lo al begavi, that he himself, Marzutra, who built the house, didn't use it himself. In other words, he also felt that it had been built inappropriately, and therefore he didn't use it himself. I don't know what he did with it. Maybe he may have had a lot of money, so maybe he was able to write it off or sell it or something. V'ha'amar Shmuel, but didn't Shmuel say, Mekable kibolet betocha tchum aser? Our original teaching was that Shmuel said, if it was built inside the tchum, it's forbidden, chutz l'tchum mutter, but outside the tchum, it's mutter, and Marzutra had built his house, or this palace, outside of the tchum, so it should have been fine. So the answer is, Adam chashuv shayni, a person who is an important person, a notable public figure, is different. They have a higher standard. And we've seen that before. We actually just saw that at the end of our last recording related to using one's ox to plow with someone else when they were a mourner. But sometimes we hold dignitaries to a higher standard, or we're supposed to. So even though it was technically permitted, they felt that it was unseemly for such a public person to have done it, and therefore they were stringent on themselves, or he was stringent on himself not to do it. V'igad Amri, some people say that there was a bigger problem, siyue siya betivna bahadayu, that he actually helped them by providing the teven, some of the materials, whatever the materials were. I'm not sure why you would build a house with teven, which is straw, but maybe they used it to build, to make the bricks. So he provided some of the raw materials, and therefore, since he provided the raw materials that they used, he materially helped them with it, and therefore he was sort of like helping on Shabbat, and that was inappropriate as well. So had they really been independent contractors and he just paid them and they provided all their own materials, that would have been fine. But since he materially helped them, it was a problem. So that's an additional limitation, that if you're going to have the workers doing it on Shabbat, they really have to be mekabli kibolet. They have to be independent contractors, and you can't help them at all. You cannot assist them at all. There's a question as to if Mar Zutra cared about this so much, why did he set it up this way? So according to some Rishonim, he either specifically instructed them not to do it on Shabbat and they didn't listen to him. Therefore he might have like a case against them. Or he never specified when he wanted them to do it, and he was just upset that they chose to do it on Shabbat. He didn't want them to do it on Shabbat, but they chose to do it that way. Now that's an interesting question. Rashi mentions, for instance, that this is a different scenario when you're hiring someone to build a house for you than if you're hiring a non-Jew to do laundry for you. Now Rashi mentions, he says the difference, which is mentioned in Masachat Shabbat, he says, Kavisa benachri, if you give your washing to a non-Jew, midi delo minkar, it is not so clearly obvious that it's yours, meaning the non-Jew has a lot of washing, and it's not clear that it's your washing or not. So you're giving him washing, and you don't want him to do it on Shabbat, but it's not obvious that it's your washing, as opposed to when they're working on your house, it's more obvious. Another way to look at it, and this is an important heter in our lives, is that if you want to give your clothes to the dry cleaner on Friday afternoon, you're permitted to do that, because you're not telling the dry cleaner when to do the stuff. They could do it Friday afternoon, they could do it on Shabbat, they could do it Saturday night, they could do it Sunday. So if you give it to them Friday and you pick it up Monday or even Sunday afternoon, as long as they have enough time to do it not on Shabbat, you're not asking them to do it on Shabbat. As the Ran points out in the sugya, he says, it's b'dinaf shayhu ka'avi. They do it on their own schedule. As long as it's on their own schedule, it is not a problem. So we're left here to wonder that if it was true that they had, that he didn't specify when they should do it, if they chose to do it on Shabbat, then it doesn't seem like it would be me'ikar hadin, forbidden, just perhaps a chumrah that he didn't use his own house. Okay, so we have another situation, or a similar situation. Rav Chama sharu lehu la'abun nagri. Rav Chama permitted this group of laborers that were called Abu Nagri, the Beresh Galuta, who worked in the house of the exilarch. There are different girsas as to what this exactly means. If they're Abu Nagri, perhaps they're carpenters, and Nagar is a carpenter, but some people say that the proper girsa is Avzangre, that it's a slightly different word, which means bathhouse attendants, or perhaps just general servants, meaning the Resh Galuta had a big palace and had lots of servants who did little things around the palace. So he permitted them, Lemeved Luhu Avita, to do their work, Bechula Dumuada, on Chol HaMoed. Omar, and he said, here's the reason, here's the heter. Kaven de Agar Loka Shakli, they do not take payment. Agar is payment. Loka Shakli, they do not take. I don't pay them. Sharshu Yehu de Kamisharshu, what they get is a benefit. Now, it's unclear what the benefit is. Some people say that the benefit was that they were cozying up to the exilarch so that some families would provide free labor in the house of the exilarch so that they could be owed a favor. So they did it, for Litova, for the hope that in the future it would benefit them. I didn't finish the sentence. Hudukam sharshule, that they are getting a sharshuye, the late lanba. It's not our problem, period. or it has nothing to do with us. So the other thing is the other possibility is that the way in which they were remunerated was just that they were fed. So they worked in the exilarch's palace and they ate meals with the household. So even though they weren't specifically paid, they did get some benefit. But that benefit was a very passive benefit. They just sat in the dining hall and were able to eat their meals. And that's the benefit that they got. So he allowed them to work on Chol HaMoed because they weren't really paid. So this is not kibbolah. This is a different kind of situation where they don't really receive remuneration except for in kind. There is a question among the Rishonim as to whether or not we're dealing here with Jewish laborers or non-Jewish laborers. And according to some Rishonim, we're actually talking about Jews here as well, who could do this work even on Shabbat. And that's assuming that the work of an Abu Nagri is not something that it violates Shabbat, meaning maybe they were just standing around or helping or directing people, things that you're allowed to do on Shabbat. If you assume that they were carpenters or laborers that did things that a Jew is not allowed to do on Shabbat, then we would only be talking about non-Jews. Okay, we're going to continue in this question, further on in the question of Mekablin Kibolet. Tanu Rabbanan, Rabbi's Tam, Mekablin Kibolet, a person who's working on a contract, Bimoed, on a festival, it is permitted to engage someone in a contract on the festival. La'asota la'achar hamoed, in order for them to do it after the festival. In other words, you can conduct business negotiations on Chol HaMoed. In other words, you can talk to this non-Jewish laborer, this handyman, and say, I want you to do work for me next week. That's permitted. Uva moed, but to tell him on the holiday that you want him to do work on the holiday, Asur, that's forbidden. And I think that's an obvious, I think the second case is obvious. The first case, not so obvious. Klolo shel davar, here is the general principle. Kol shehu oseh, anything that a Jew is allowed to do on Yantif, omer lenachri v'oseh, you can tell a non-Jew to do that work. And this is the general principle of amira la'akum, of telling a non-Jew to do things. You know, there's a lot of discussion about what a Shabbos goy is, but the general principle, there are exceptions, but the general principle is if you're allowed to do it on Shabbat, you can ask a non-Jew to do it. V'chol she'eino oseh, but anything that you're not allowed to do on Shabbat or Yom Tov, eino omer l'nachri v'oseh, you cannot ask a non-Jew to do it. So the general principle that there is such a thing as a Shabbos goy is rejected by this. In general, you may not ask a non-Jew to do things for you on Shabbat and Yom Tov that you can't do. Now, there are exceptions for the sake of the community, for the sake of a mitzvah, for the sake of a chole. There are cases and ways in which that can sometimes be changed. But the general principle is that you can't have a Shabbos goy. That's what it says here. Tanya Idach, we have another brisa that teaches us about this. Mekablin kibolet b'moed la'asota la'achar hamoed. Similar thing. You may accept a contract on the festival in order for the non-Jew to do work for you after the festival. U'bilvad, but there's an exception. Shelo yimdod v'lo yishkol v'shelo yimne. As long as you don't measure or weigh or count. Kederach shehu oseh b'chol. In the way that you do it during the weekday. Now this seems to fall under the same category as we talked about with Rabbi Yehuda before, that you have to make a shinui. So ordinarily, if you are setting up a contract, you may want to set exact parameters for the contract. I want this number of feet of cloth, or I want this many eggs, or whatever it is, you're setting up, you're measuring. But we have a general principle that on Shabbat and Yom Tov, we don't measure. It's a Isur Derabanan to measure things precisely on Yom Tov, and we do Paskin this way. So you have to make this shinui. Even if you accept the contract work, you have to leave some of the details, or you can't at least do the actual measuring and counting at that time. Shulchan Aruch, he mentions this related to, in the Mishnah Berurah, he mentions this related to giving laundry to someone on Chol HaMoed in order to do it, in order to wash it for after Chol HaMoed, that you could only do it if you don't count the clothing. So if you're doing a specific invoice that says how many pieces you've given to the launderer or to the dry cleaner, you can't do it. And he says perhaps this is the reason why our minhag is not to do this, because we don't trust them enough to give it to them without counting. On the other hand, if you do it the way, let's say I do it, where you just take, you fill your bag, you have a regular dry cleaner and you fill your bag and you just drop the bag off at the dry cleaner. He doesn't count it. You don't count it. You just trust him to do it. Then that would probably be okay. Okay, continuing on. Tanu Rabbanan, our rabbis taught, Ein marbi'in behema b'cholo shel moed. One of the kinds of labor that you're not allowed to do on Chol HaMoed is marbi'in behema, which is breeding animals. Now, I am not an expert in breeding animals, but it seems to me that this is a very specific kind of activity in which you bring a male and a female animal together and you force them to mate. You actually like have to coax them or position them so that the male is mounting the female. And that this is a labor-intensive activity, that it requires attention and time to do it. So you're not allowed to do that on Chol HaMoed. Kayotze bo, similarly, ein marbi'in bebechor v'lo bepsulei hamukdashin. This is an unrelated topic. A bechor has a certain level of sanctity. This is referring to a firstborn animal. And psulei hamukdashin, which are animals that were going to be brought as sacrifices, but then got a blemish on them, so they can't be offered as a sacrifice. Both of them retain a certain amount of kedusha, and you're not allowed to do work with them. So using them as studs in order to mate them is considered to be work, and you're not allowed to do it. It has nothing to do with Yontif or Shabbos or Chol HaMoed. It applies all the time. It's just because they are a Bechor or a Psul Mikdash, you're not allowed to do this work with them. In other words, breeding animals is considered to be a malacha. Okay, Tanya Idach, we learn in a separate braita. Ein marbi'in behema b'chulo shel moed. We may not breed animals on Chol HaMoed. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, and here is our leniency, this is the heter, chamora, if you have a female donkey, shetava, who is in heat, marbi'in ala hazachar, you may breed her with a male, bishvil shelo tzitzanein, so that she shouldn't cool down. So Rabbi Yehuda is considering this to be a situation of a loss on Chol HaMoed, where once this chamora is in heat, you have to either breed her or not breed her. If you wait until after the festival, she may no longer be in heat, and then she won't breed. So in other words, if you don't do it now, you'll suffer a loss. Rabbi Yehuda is fitting that into the general context of a davar ha'aved. Ushar kol ha-behemos, but the rest of the animals where you can force them to breed this week or next week, so there's no loss. You could just choose to do it after the holiday. Machnisin otan lebekarot, he gives an additional heter, even though you can't actively breed them, what you can do is put them in the same pen. And if then maybe they'll breed with each other, you know, maybe they'll, if especially if they're in heat, they'll breed with each other. But as you're not doing it exactly the way that it's done during the weekday. Okay, Tanu Rabbanan. Our rabbis taught. So that is breeding. Now we have something similar related to animals as well. We've moved on from hiring non-Jews to what you're allowed to do with your own property. We're back to that topic, what you're allowed to do with your own property on Chol HaMoed. But here in this case, we're going to bring the two together. Ein medayrin, you may not herd animals into a pen. Lo b'Shabbatot v'lo b'Yomim Tovim v'lo b'Chulo Shel Moed. Not on Shabbat, not on holidays, and not on the intermediate days of the holidays. V'im ba'u me'alehen mutar. But if they come into the pen themselves, then it's permitted. In other words, you can't herd them into the pen, but you could open the door, and if they go in on their own, that's fine. Now, Rashi explains that medayrin, putting them in the pen here, is for a specific purpose. The specific purpose is to fertilize the field. So what you want to have the animals in the field, and as they walk around the field, they will poop in the fields, and then you'll use that manure as fertilizer. So it's labor intensive because, and we'll see in a second, because you want to keep the animals moving around the field so that it gets fertilized all over the place. But the word medayrin just means to herd them into the pen. And that the labor intensivity there is that you have to move them, meaning today you want them to create manure in this pen, and then tomorrow you're going to move them into the next pen. So every day you have to herd them into a new pen. That's the labor that's here. So you're not allowed to do that. Ve'ein misayin otan, and here it says that you can't help them. Now the question is, who are you helping? It seems that what you have here is a non-Jewish field hand who is the one who's doing the work. And you've hired him to do this, but you don't want him to do it on Shabbat and Yom Tov. And even though he's doing it, you can't help him. You can't do some work along with him. Ve'ein mosin lahen shomer, and you also may not provide your employee with a guard, another employee, lina'er etzonam, to, Rashi says lina'er means to guard the sheep, but the Rashi in the manuscript says lina'er usually means to shake. So what it means probably is that you don't want them to stay in one place. As we said, you want to keep prodding them and pushing them along so that they put manure in this part of the field and then you make them move to another part of the field and they do their business there. So that you needed to have someone who was mina'er at Tzonam, who was constantly moving them around the field. So you're not allowed to do any of that. That is all forbidden on Shabbat and Yantif and Chol HaMoed. However, here's the heter. Hayas Schir Shabbat, but what if he was hired to work all week in that field? Schir Chodesh, or you had hired him temporarily for a month's worth of labor, Schir Shana, or for a year, Schir Shavua, or for 7 years. So he was a contracted laborer. This sounds like a kind of a kibolet situation where he is a contracted laborer to you, and this Chol HaMoed, or this Shabbat, or this Yom Tov, is just 1 day within his contract. So in that situation, misayinotan, not only are you allowed to do it, but you can also help them a little. This is assuming that you're helping them not in a way that violates Shabbat or Yom Tov, but doing some small tasks to help them. Umosin lahem shomer, and you can provide for them a shomer, lina'er etzonam, in order to move the sheep around. So he's giving leniency here for the kibolet, for someone who is a regular laborer, to do some of these things that are not generally allowed on Shabbat. Again, it's a situation where you have set it up from before Shabbat for them to do this. However, it is not a situation where they get to choose to do it on their own time. Here, they have to do it on this particular day. Every day, you want them to move the animals to another pen. That's the Tanakama. Rabbi Omer, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, he says, B'Shabbat, he limits this case, B'Shabbat B'Tova, if you're doing this on Shabbat, you can only do it if they're working for you for free. But they're working for you for Tova Ta'ayin, they're doing you a favor, because then they're hoping that you'll repay that favor one day. So you do owe them something, but it's very unspecified, and you don't have to give it to them right now. B'Yom Tov B'Mizonot, on Yom Tov, a little more leniently, you can provide them with food, so they're not getting paid money, but that you are giving them food, you're paying them in kind. There's a big dispute among the poskim as to whether or not you can pay them with the food on Yontif itself or only after Yontif. But in any case, you can compensate them with food. B'moed and on Chol HaMoed, in the intermediate days of the festival, B'schar, then you can actually pay them. So he limits it. He says the case here depends on which you have to differentiate between the three cases of Shabbat and Yom Tov and Chol HaMoed. Rav Yosef, says, Hilchata k'Rebbe, the law is like Rebbe. In other words, even in the situation where you are allowed to hire them a shomer and to move them around and to have this non-Jew doing this work for you, it's only according to the limitation where you have to be most careful on Shabbat, less careful on Yom Tov, and most lenient on Chol HaMoed. We will stop there at our Mishnah. We are 5 lines down in the wide lines. We'll continue in our next recording. Have a wonderful day.